Here.
Okay, so last week we introduced the idea of the body and the soul, the element of the guf and of the neshama. In the words of the Chovas HaLevavos, and the way that he defines it is that the body is seen and that the soul is unseen. Something which you can see and something that you can't see, and that is his primary indication, that which is nira and eino nira. And therefore there are two types of avodah, two types of service that we are therefore obligated to do, one which is seen and one which is unseen. The chovas ha'ivorim, the obligations upon our physical body, because we have a physical body which is seen, obligates us in an avodah which is seen, and the fact that we have a neshama which is not seen obligates us in an avodah which is unseen. And that's what we are focusing on, understanding, tapping into what exactly that will look like and what that is, what that requires of us. And we left off by defining that the principal goal of our seen avoda, that which we do which is on our physical body, is to elevate the physical body in the way that Moshe Rabbeinu was elevated, to the point where his physical body became like that of a malach, became like that of an angel, to purify the body, to allow the body itself to, so to speak, stand before Hashem. Generally, the body, which is more considered lowly and base, animal-like, would be inappropriate to stand before Hashem. And the mitzvahs, the goal of those mitzvahs, of physical things that we do, are to elevate the body to a point where it becomes purified, so to speak. What about the service of the soul? So that we quoted the Gemara in Brachos, where the Gemara says that the phrase Barchi Nafshi was said 5 times. The phrase David HaMelech says, let my soul praise Hashem, was said 5 times. And the Gemara said, the reason for that was the 5 times that the phrase Barchi Nafshi is said is Keneged the soul and Keneged Hashem. That there are 5 traits which are shared between Hashem and the soul. Both Hashem and the soul fill the whole world. Just like Hashem fills the whole world, the soul fills the whole body. Just like Hashem gives sustenance to the world, the soul gives sustenance to the body. Just like Hashem is seen, or sees, but is not seen, so too the soul sees, but is not seen. And just like the Hashem lives in a room inside of a room in the inner depths of the world, so too the soul is in the inner depths of our being. The Gemara went on 5 different things in which they're parallel. So the Gemara concluded that which has the same 5 traits should come and give praise to Hashem who shared those same 5 traits. So that it is the soul which is more appropriate, most fitting to give praise to Hashem, because the soul shares the traits that Hashem has. And Revolver focused on the idea that the primary trait is that it sees but is not seen. The idea of living, tapping into a world of ruchnias, tapping into a world of spiritual essence that can see, just like we believe in a God who sees us, the Ribbono Shel Olam is aware of what we're doing, even though we can't see Him, that we all have a soul, we have a neshama which sees, even though it can't be seen, and that there's a reality of ruchnius in the world, there's a reality of a spiritual reality in the world, which even though it can't be seen, still continues to exist. Okay, that was a brief synopsis of what we did last week, and we'll pick up this week, moving into the realm of a little bit more practical. Says the Revolvus. Now, what do we do with this? How do we combine these two? I'm on page Yud Gimel by the Os Beis, if you want to follow inside. How do we put these two together? How do these two parts of our avoda work in tandem together? The part of our avoda which needs to be seen and the part of it which is unseen. That which is part of our body, that which is part of our soul. Being that the physical acts that we do, the putting on the tefillin and the tzitzis and the mezuzah, all the things that we physically do are there to elevate the body. How does that fit together with the part of our body, or the part of our avoda which is unseen, the part which is our chovas halavavos, the duties of our heart, the obligations to think and to feel certain things? How do those two go together? So I want to start reading from inside. We'll start from the 3rd paragraph where I had underlined barely visible there. So he starts as follows. I'm going to start from the third line down. Let's start from the second line. Reishis avodos, the beginning of the second line. Reishis avodos shel ha'odam hi, the beginning of the avoda of a person. Where's the starting point of our avoda? The person wants to say, I want to become an Oved Hashem. I want to become someone who serves Hashem, works on myself, develops. What's the beginning? Where do I start? Says the Revolver, l'mashesh ruchnius v'livnos es pnimius. A person has to begin to feel ruchnius, to begin to understand, to tap into that reality that there are things which I can't see, like Hashem, for example, like my own neshama, and even though I can't see them, to feel and appreciate that they're real, and to build my inner world. Livnos es pnimiuso. What does it mean to build my inner world? V'hi ha'avoda b'chovos halvavos. That is the avoda of what we call our chovos halvavos, the obligations of my heart, where you can't see me doing anything. You don't know what's going on inside, but inside I'm working. Inside I'm thinking, I'm feeling, I'm becoming aware of things. And the beginning of my avoda is to develop that. Now he writes, that's not a simple thing. Many people can live their entire lives and never come in touch with that, never really be aware that they're working on outside of the physical manifestations, but there is something going on. We have a reality inside of us that no one else goes on. We have running conversations in our head all day long. Those are all part of our inner world, which is yours alone, and no one else is part of. Our closest friends and spouses have no idea what's going on inside that running conversation, but there is that part of us, that pnimius, that also needs to serve Hashem, needs to be part of our avoda. Aside from the physical things that I need to do, I need to begin to serve Hashem with my lave as well. Now, as we begin that, umigidre avoda zu, how do we begin this avoda? Lifnos oref, to turn your head, literally to turn your neck, to turn away from l'chol negia gashmish u'l'chol dover hanira le'inayim. Turn away from anything that's physical, tangible, and you can see. If you can see it, so then that's still in the world of the physical. We're trying to tap into the world of the spiritual, which you can't see, so you need to remove yourself from that which can be seen. Explains, Leval Nisa Einenu, not to turn your eyes, Lishum To'eles Gashmish, Ha'alula Litzmoyach, Mizesh Eroyim Osanu Mekayimim Mitzvos. To turn away from any physical benefit that would accrue by doing mitzvos. What does that mean, that there's a physical benefit by doing mitzvos? Well, there are lots of benefits that we get in this world by doing mitzvos. Kavod, we get honor, we have people to think that they see that we're doing certain things. There are lots of benefits that a person gets from other people seeing us do mitzvahs. You know, I was reading this, I was with Harusa recently, so we got up to this point, that's what we took upon ourselves, we were going to start working on doing mitzvahs without being aware or caring what else is going on around us. So the very following morning, I got to shul, one of the things that I've been working on is getting to shul on time. When I get to shul, when I'm ready with my talis and tefillin on time. So first is just making sure to get there before davening starts. Now the next goal is to get there a few minutes earlier than that I can actually have my talis and tefillin on before. So this was a couple weeks ago, I got to shul one morning on time, and I was so on time, I actually had my talis and tefillin on before we started. I was feeling great about it. And as I'm there, Rabbi Rosenbaum walks in. And I thought to myself, I'm so glad that I'm here on time on the talis and tefillin on, that Rabbi Rosenbaum, who's my neighbor, should see that I'm here on time. I called myself and I said, wait, this week we're working on doing mitzvahs without caring. And I know it's just because I want to do this because I need to do the mitzvah. I want to be ready to daven appropriately. So I caught that train of thought and I stopped. As I'm controlling that train of thought and trying to push away the fact that Rabbi Rosenbaum is there, Rabbi Feldman walks in and I say, yes! That's where we're at. It's hard to be focused on doing things because that's what we need to be doing, because the reality is we become very much aware of that which is going on around us. So a couple weeks ago I generally daven with a hat. That's the long story when I picked that up, but that's what's been for over a decade now. It's been more than 10 years since I've adopted that policy that I daven with a hat. Now, it happens where I don't have a hat with me during davening, because especially here, where mincha is usually there, sometimes it's not always with me. Sometimes the night before I ended up over there. I'll show up to mincha mariv, and I'll realize that my hat was at home, or it's in the car, there's not enough time to get it, so I daven that hat. Nope, happens, not a big deal. Maybe it is a big deal, I don't think it's the biggest deal. I go through with my davening. It happened once, recently, when it happened, that there were a couple of visitors in town, and they looked, I don't know who they were, they looked like chashavayin, they looked like they were pretty important, they had real nice long beards, and they all had hats on to work. And the whole time during mincha, I am totally thrown off I can't believe it. I have it. I'm supposed to get up. I'm here to sit in front of the shul. Now I'm going to, I'm going to be speaking now. I'm thinking, what did I have prepared? Is it going to make me sound like I should be a rabbi of a shul? I should be a rabbi of a shul because it looks so funny. The whole mincha was totally shot. And at some point it occurred to me, I said, what in the world is going on? Like, why are you wearing a hat anyway? Like, whatever is this about? It's not about some guy sitting in the second row who, I don't even know who he is. I don't know, he might be here once, he might never ever show up here again. I don't know, maybe he doesn't care. Like, what? But sometimes we get so lost in the positive things that we're doing, which really are for a good purpose, the reason why.
But it could be a scout for a rabbi position.
It could be. You never know. Believe me, that's not through my mind. And we're involved in the right thing. We're involved in positive mitzvahs. Showing up on time to davening is all good. Having a nice lulav and etzrog is a mitzvah. And yet, sometimes as we are picking them out, what goes through our minds are not so much the relationship between myself and the mitzvah or whatever it is that I'm doing. It becomes some external feature becomes relevant. So says, as soon as that external feature becomes relevant, you're shifting away from your inner world, your relationship between your lave and the Ribono Shel Olam, and you've now entered. There are other stuff going on. There's some benefit. Someone's going to think you're a good guy. Someone thinks you're a religious guy. Someone's going to think you're really smart. Someone's going to think you're really frum. Whatever it is that someone else out there, as soon as it's something else out there, so then you've moved away from developing this inner world that doesn't care what else is out there. I'm developing myself and my as a person and as a servant of Hashem, and therefore it becomes irrelevant what's going on. Uve ikar, so he says Revolta, so you need to remove yourself from any benefit that will accrue to you because you're being mekayim a mitzvah. Remove yourself from that. Uve ikar, I'm 5 lines down by that dash in the middle of the line. Uve ikar lehisragel beemunos hachai roi. Get used to lehisragel, means to become accustomed and familiar with the Emunos Hachai Roi, the living one who sees me, a reference to Hashem. Haroye ve'eno nira. Now, this is something which, if I were to ask anyone here and say, do you believe in a creator, that there is a God, and that he sees you, and that you can't see him? Do you believe in that? Mm-hmm. So, probably everybody sitting in this room would say, yes, I believe that. I believe that even though I can't see him, he sees me. Or he exists, which would be the first step, and then he sees me, and he knows what I'm doing. Now, it's one thing to be able to answer the question that way, it's another thing to actually live your life that way. To actually walk around with your inside conversation within your head, being aware and familiar with the fact that somebody is watching me. Everything that I do is being watched. Every thought that I have is being recorded, because there is somebody who I can't see who is watching. Rabbi Yochanan, the great Rabbi Yochanan. Yeah. We're just getting started. The great Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, when he was on his deathbed, so his students came in and they said, Rebbe, teach us one last thing before you leave this world. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says to his students, Yiratzon, it should be Hashem's will, Shemoira Shemayim Aleichem, that the fear of heaven should be upon you, Kemoira Basar Vidam. The fear of heaven should be upon you in the same way as you fear human beings, flesh and blood. And his students said, Rebbe, that's your final teaching? The last word you want to leave us with is that we should fear God the same way that we fear man? And he said, Halavai, it should only be that way. Because we all know how fearful we are of man finding us and catching us doing something wrong. A person slips and falls, and the first thing they do is look around to see who saw them. Forget about when they do things that are really bad, that they just want to make sure that nobody saw. Says Rabbi Yochanan, if we would live our lives in a way that we actually considered it, that Hashem was watching us in the same way that we see and feel man watching us, we'd be really better off than we are right now. So that's the first thing that a person needs to adjust and get used to and begin to live with that reality more often than if I just were to ask you the question, do you believe that somebody's watching you? But to actually on your own live a life in which you are being watched. They say a famous Hasid, the Shasura, I can't remember, he's traveling with somebody, and the person didn't know that he was a rabbi. He was just hitching a ride in a wagon with a Jew, and they're traveling along, and they get to somebody's field where there are apple trees, and they were hungry, so the wagon driver stops and says, listen, I'm going to go in there and grab a couple apples. You scream out if you see anybody coming. So the guy hops the fence, and he starts to pick an apple, and Lev Yitzchak starts screaming, hey, stop, stop, someone's coming. So he runs back, and there's nobody there. He says, what are you doing? Someone's coming. I could tell somebody was here. So he goes back over, and he starts picking an apple. And, stop, stop, stop. They don't need to finish the Chassidus Shabbos. It tells it, like, he lived his life. Someone's watching. Like, you can't pick somebody else's apples. Like, I don't care if no one's there, but someone's always watching. And to live our life that way is a different reality than before we are prepared to live our life that way. So says Rav Olva, the beginning of developing our inner world, the beginning of developing a world of pnimius, of that inner ruchnius, that spirituality that resides within us, is getting used to that idea, that thought process that there is somebody watching us even though I can't see him. Then he says, ha'omed al nekuda pnimizu, someone who understands this idea, what will happen is, once you develop that, once you become accustomed to that sense that someone's watching you, what happens is your physical mitzvahs become different. When you're putting on your tefillin yesterday, this morning, yesterday we didn't put on tefillin, when you put on your tefillin this morning and you did it without any thought, you did it without any awareness, you just did it, when you begin to work on that thought process of becoming aware, someone's watching, you live your life, you live your day regularly thinking that, when you put on your tefillin tomorrow morning, it's a different mitzvah than it was this morning. Because you're living in a world where things are being watched. And your physical mitzvahs become infused with your lev mitzvahs, that which was once only in your heart, then totally changes the nature of your avodasa hagluya, your physical manifestation of the mitzvah. And with this you'll fulfill the purpose of why we're here. He already explained last week, we spoke about that the purpose of the mitzvahs that we do are to change our physical being, our body, into an embodiment of light. That the light of our neshama shines through, so to speak, our body. How does that happen? It doesn't happen by doing mitzvahs by rote. It doesn't happen by doing physical acts with no thought, with no heart behind them. It only happens when the heart's already there. Once the heart's in place, the thought process in place, the inner world has been developed, then it totally changes the external mitzvahs that you do, and it changes that into the type of avoda that will change the physical manifestations into the enlightening impact that it has to have. And he explains that in the fourth paragraph there, which I didn't underline, which I want to just speak out, he quotes from the Chovos HaLevavos, the same source that we've been reading, later on in the Shaar HaBitachon. He writes as follows, it's quoted and it starts with the second line, HaBorah Yisborach Goimel Al Maise Hanira Al El Ha'Evarim. Hashem repays the mitzvahs that we do with the an action which is Hanira El Ha'Evarim. An act that you do, a mitzvah that you do, which can be seen on your body, he repays that v'gmul hanira ba'av olam hazeh, with a reward which is seen in this world. You do an act, you do a mitzvah which is seen, which is done with your physical body, it will be repaid in a manner that can be seen in this world. Ugmul al hamaisa hatzafun v'hanister, and the reward for your mitzvahs which are done in a manner that's hidden and no one knows that you're doing them, bigmul nister, hugmul b'ha'olam haba. That will be repaid in a reward which is also hidden, meaning that's rewarded in the world to come. Now there's a major problem with such a statement. This is a statement that the Chovos HaLevavos makes. If you do a mitzvah in the physical manifestation with your physical body that's seen, the reward is a reward that is seen. This world. If it's done in a way that's not seen, the reward is not seen in the next world. What's the problem with this?
You put on tefillin, we know you get reward in the next world.
But so, more than that,
you must be talking about the side, you know.
So, not only do we know that you're rewarded in the next world, the Gemara has a statement that says, Schar b'hai alma leka. There's no such thing as reward in this world. This is not the world for reward. This is the world in which we do things. This is the world in which we accomplish, in which we change, in which we develop, in which we affect. The reward, says the Gemara, is not in this world. As a policy, there is no schar in this world that's in the next world. So says Rav Olva, how can the Baal Chovos HaLevavos, how can he write that if it's done with your physical body, you'll be rewarded in this world. It's not true. The Gemara, when it teaches that principle, is teaching that principle in the midst of Shiluach HaKein, in the midst of sending away the mother bird before you take its eggs. Is that a seen mitzvah or an unseen mitzvah? Of course it's seen. Calling on the water, you shoo away the mother bird, you think, that's not a chovas alei, that's not a chovah, that's not a mitzvah in the heart, to believe, to fear, to think certain things, to believe in certain things.
And on that... Around.
Okay, but on that, the Gemara says, there's no such thing as reward in this world, it's for the next world. How could he say that if it's done with your body, you get it in this world, if it's done with your mind, your heart, your soul? Says Rav Volba, the only explanation that I have... 4 lines from the bottom, if you want to read it inside in that paragraph. Lefi darkenu, harei atachlesi le'acheid chovos ha'ivorim v'chovos ha'alvovos v'hoyu lachadim. To unify the chovos ha'lev, the obligations of your heart, the thought process of your heart, together with the obligations of your body. So that the actions which are revealed become actions which are really hidden. Even though you see me put in on tefillin, but there's so much more to that mitzvah. When you saw me putting on film this morning, what you saw is exactly what you got. There is no mind involved. So all that it was a person putting on tefillin. You saw the whole thing. The goal is to change that mitzvah of putting on tefillin into a mitzvah which is full of thoughts. Your head, your mind, your heart. And that you can't see. When the mitzvah is the combination of the physical manifestation together with the chovos halavavos, with all of the obligations of the heart as well, that's where the Gemara says there's no reward for such a thing in this world. But if you're doing mitzvahs and the manner of the mitzvah is only with your physical body, there is no heart involved, there is no thought process, there is no feeling involved, so then a physical act, which if that's all that it is a physical act, might be rewarded only physically in this world. Continue to revolve on the bottom paragraph. He quotes from the Ibn Ezer. Ibn Ezer says as follows. He quotes the Reike Hamoyach, the empty of heart of mind, to ask the following question: how long was Moshe Rabbeinu up on Har Sinai for?
20 days.
Total.
No, when he received the Torah. 40 days and 40 nights. You ever wonder about that number?
It's 40,000.
Yeah, okay, I don't mean to say the specific number 40. I mean that it was a significant period of time. He didn't go up for 2 days. He didn't go up for 3 days. But he didn't go up for 8 months. He went up for 40 days. So the Reike HaMoyach, says the Ibn Ezra, asked, what did he do up there all that time? How long would it have taken him to learn all of the mitzvahs? Why did he need so much time, 40 days and 40 nights, to receive the Torah?
Oh.
Right? Now, for the rest of us who say, like, yeah, I mean, we're going to... But imagine if you were Moshe Rabbeinu, and you were learning from Hashem, how much time would it take to receive the... Do you think he could, like, whatever miracle took place that he got it in 40... Like, what did he do up there for 40 days and 40 nights? So he quotes, the Reike HaMoyach asked that question. The empty of head... ask that question as to what was he doing up there for 40 days and 40 nights.
He was testing the Jewish people.
The Jewish people be tested because he was up there for so long. Mm-hmm. Well, he told them he was going up there. I mean, because he was the Chet Egel, you're referring to, that he came down late. Okay, that wouldn't require him to have been up there for 40 days. He could have had that same thing for a 3-day test. Listen to Ibn Ezra's answer. This is what he answers. For lo yodu, they don't understand, those who ask such a question. He could have been up there for years and years and years. Moshe Rabbeinu would not have understood not a thousandth of his actions, of Hashem's own essence, the so-called hamitzvah shetzivo, nor would he have understood the secrets of the mitzvahs that he commanded. He wouldn't have understood any of that. Those who ask this question, they think that the principal purpose of Moshe going up and the principal purpose of him giving us the Torah is the maisa, is our doing actions. Making sure you're wearing tzitzis and putting on tefillin in the morning, keeping Shabbos and keeping kashrus. Ve'eino rak ha'levov ve'hamaisa. But they're wrong. It's not only the action. What it is your heart together with your action. That's Ibn Ezra's answer. Volba understands, let me read one line of the Ibn Ezra. Kadmonenu Amar Rachmanu Li Baboy. The Gemara says, what does Hashem really want? After all that it really wants is our heart. V'shoresh koil ha-mitzvos ad she-ye'ehov es Hashem v'chol nafsho v'yedavik bo. The source, the root of all the mitzvos is not just that you should put on tefillin. The root of all the mitzvos is that you should love Hashem with all of your heart and all of your soul and cleave towards it, to Him. Avol explains this dialogue. He says, the Reke Hamloch, they think, if all that Moshe needed to do was to learn how to do the mitzvos, he could have learned it much quicker than 40 days. Moshe Rabbeinu, learning from Hashem, he wouldn't have needed 40 days. That's not what he was up there doing. The main thing is the lev, is the heart. And as the, in Revolva's words, libo shel adam, it's the heart of a person. Umagam libo shel Moshe Rabbeinu ein lo gvul. There's no boundary, there's no limitation to the heart of a person. There's no limitation to how much a person can be a ma'amin, can be a one who believes in Hashem, can trust in Him, can put his faith in Him, can love Him, can fear Him. All those things which are on your heart, there's no bound, there's no limit to that. There's a limit to the amount of halachas that you need to learn. Just facts. Moshe Rabbeinu could have learned them. He could have learned them faster than 40 days and 40 nights too. But that's not what he was doing. It's a matter of absorbing everything into his heart. And the heart has no limit. When it's the heart that's accepting the Torah, when it's the heart that's fulfilling the mitzvah, then it's magdil u'ma'adir, beautifies and glorifies the Torah without limit. And had Moshe Rabbeinu stood in Har Sinai for years, his heart would have never said enough. I have it all, I'm ready to go down. Never would have limited to the amount that his heart could have absorbed. The information he got, and the more time that he was up there, was what he needed for his lave. This is what we need to build. We need to learn to build the chovos halavavos. When a person builds his inner workings of his heart, his understanding, and expands his lave, when he begins to fulfill his mitzvahs with feeling, with emotion, with heart, so then the mitzvahs that he does, the physical manifestations as well, become infused with meaning and change or elevate, so to speak, the physical body into that level of the Moshe Rabbeinu, where the body itself becomes elevated through the heart, the process that goes in.
So you're saying that it's better for someone to, like Gemara, for instance, it's better for someone to learn one page of Gemara over and over and over again until it actually means something to them, versus learning, you know, all of Gemara and it not meaning a thing to them.
Okay, that's once you get into actual learning, he's talking right now just about being Mekayim Mitzvahs. In other words, the physical manifestation of putting on Mitzvahs, wearing Tefillin, keeping Shabbos, keeping Kashrus, those kinds of Mitzvahs, doing them with, not by rote, not without the feeling, but that the focus, the principle is the heart, the feeling, the emotion that lies behind it, transforming our Mitzvahs into something that's power that I can't see. It needs to be that when you do a Mitzvah, I actually don't know what it is that you're... There's more going on than just you're physically putting on tefillin, which I can see. It needs to become a mitzvah, which I can't see. That it engages the soul, which is the most appropriate part of our essence, to praise Hashem and to serve Him. That there's a combination. It's not just that sometimes I do things with my body and sometimes I do them with my soul, but even when I'm doing things with my body, I'm doing them with my soul. That's a task. That needs to be learned. We don't necessarily do that very well. We do things by rote. And Rav Yisrael Reisman, who gives a shiur in New York, the well-known speaker, so he tells the worst question he ever received, his most painful question that he ever received was from, I think he said it was up in the mountains during the summer, and a guy came to him with his tefillin shel yad on his hand, and his tefillin shel rosh were on his hand, meaning he was wearing his tefillin shel yad, and he was holding his tefillin shel rosh in his hands. And he said, Rabbi, I have no idea if I'm in the process of putting these on before I've davened, or if I'm now taking them off after davening. Sleepwalking. Now, I've never gotten so bad that I don't remember if I've davened at all, but it's often happened where, like, I'm not sure, did I say this already? Like, there's certain parts of the davening where, like, no recollection if I did this or if I didn't, because you're just not there. So that's an extreme. Really, I'm hoping he didn't make it up. He once said he received such a question, so I'm assuming he once did.
It's a challenge, because for instance, like I'm the new business I'm in is in this like seminar business, and one of the lessons that the guy talks about is the stages of learning, and I think the first stage is like subconsciously incompetent, where you don't even like know what you don't know, and then you know consciously incompetent, meaning you know that you don't know, and then consciously competent, and you know it, but you have to think about it, and then subconsciously competent, where you just do it, like driving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just drive and we get somewhere, and
exactly.
We're like, oh, how do we get there? So it's tough because as Jews, we want to, over time, as we do things over and over again, it becomes second nature to us.
So
you want, it's not like you want to, you know, I won't put on tefillin today so that tomorrow it means something to me. You do it every day because you're supposed to. And then it becomes like, oh.
That is exactly what he's addressing. In other words, that we do need to get ourselves into a pattern where we do it. My behavioral pattern is I will wake up at a certain time that I can get to davening before I have to start my day at work. But the goal of life is never that it should be by rote, where you've disengaged your heart from your body, your neshama from your guf, so that there is nothing else going on other than I just threw on my tefillin this morning. I put on tzitzis, I wore towels, I wore tefillin, I just did all these mitzvahs, and it had no meaning. It had no impact. There was no connection. That, yes, we never want our avodas Hashem to become driving the car. And as a perfect example of that, and it's in the same way when it comes to a relationship. Driving a car is a task that we need to do, and the better we can get at driving a car by rote, the more mental space is freed up to do other things. Talk on the phone, shave, make breakfast, hopefully not all at the same time while you're driving. But we just increase more and more activities that we do while we're driving, because the more we do it by rote, the more we're able to concentrate on other things. And you'll notice when you're driving, if you suddenly run into either it starts pouring rain or there's something going on, you will tune out whatever else you were doing. You're listening to the radio, and it's just like it's not. You start focusing again on driving, and then whenever it is passes, all of a sudden you hear again what's going on. Like, oh, I just missed 10 minutes of the tape that I was listening to because I you can't do both. But when driving is by rote, you can focus on other things. In a relationship, if you begin driving your relationship in the same way you drive your car, your relationship is in trouble. No one wants to be as a human being on the back end of a relationship where the person's doing it by road. You walk in Friday afternoon and drop off flowers on the table as if you're driving a car, it's just part of your routine. Well, then it loses its meaning. There's nothing there. The activity, there's nothing significant in that. It has to be that there's something significant, there's some meaning involved. And the same thing is true, says Rabbi, in our mitzvahs, yes, we want to grow to a point where we keep kosher without thinking about it. It's not an option that I would do something else. It's not an option that I'm not going to keep Shabbos. Of course I'm going to daven and wear tefillin and tzitzis. But if it's been done with that, whatever what you would call that, you know, subconscious incompetence, that's a negative when it comes to serving Hashem. It always has to be what you would, in that terminology, the step before that,
right,
when I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, consciously.
I want it to be consciously competent where, you know what, before I put on tefillin this morning, I'm actually going to stop and think for a minute. I'm putting on tefillin this morning. There's a significance to that. There's a reason for this mitzvah. It's supposed to affect something. And that you can actually say, when you're done putting on tefillin, it meant something to me, and that tomorrow's tefillin is different than today's tefillin. I am not at a stage where I can say that tomorrow I'm going to hopefully after this, you know, tomorrow's tefillin won't be like. But I can tell you this morning's tefillin was the same as Friday's, which was the same. And it's the same in that it's just a big zero. There's just very little going on mentally in most of the mitzvahs that we do. You know, a great example of this is every year Hanukkah or Sukkot. First time you take your lulav and esrog, first yontif morning, there's something going on. You're excited to fulfill the mitzvah. You went out, you picked out your lulav and your esrog, you got to shul, and by the eighth day, it's just a hassle. It's just an extra 20 minutes. The davening starts early before you got to go to work and hallel and things, and it's just an inconvenience. It doesn't have any of the same feeling that you had on day one. Chanukah candles are the same story. The first night of Chanukah, you make three brachos, it's geschmack. You stand, you look at the candles. By the eighth night, you know, it's like, hopefully you remember to light candles, you get a light, and you can do other things. That's how things go. And what the whole focus of what he's saying is, you need to always engage the lathe in the physical mitzvahs that you do. Otherwise, they're just physical mitzvahs. There's schar, sure, but it becomes a this-worldly type mitzvah and a this-worldly type schar. If you engage the neshama in the mitzvah, you engage the lathe while you're doing it, then you elevate it to a totally different stature, a totally different plane of mitzvah. And that's the task. That's what his whole sefer is about, is learning to get used to engaging the neshama in the mitzvahs that we do with our guf. Neshama-like mitzvahs, emunah, and yirah, and ahava, fear, and belief, and love, well, those are neshama mitzvahs. So either you're doing them or you're not doing them. But if you are doing them, you're doing them with your neshama. But the guf mitzvahs, the trap that we fall into is relegating it to only guf mitzvahs, where they're done by rote without any lay, without any neshama involved. And the trick is learning to engage the neshama, even though it's a guf category mitzvah. That's the goal that he wants us to work on. Let me see if I can throw in this last little word that he has.
It's a psalm. That's what took Moshe Rabbeinu 40 days.
Yeah. So it took him 40 days. It was not to learn what the body needs to do. Ibn Ezra held that Moshe Rabbeinu could have learned that in a lot less than 40 days. If you just wanted him to spit out a Shulchan Aruch, you know, it takes us decades to learn the Shulchan Aruch, if we're lucky. Moshe Rabbeinu could have learned the Shulchan Aruch in less than 40 days.
Isn't there an Indian that he just didn't get it for 39 days?
There's a Chazal that he couldn't understand, yeah. Yes, the Chazal say that he couldn't understand anything, and then afterwards Hashem just finally gave it as a matano. Yes, there's a Chazal guy. The Ibn Ezra is certainly not, he's taking a different photo, 100%, yeah.
But even there, he had to put in the Ishtadlus, I guess.
Correct.
And that's what he would say is what he's doing.
I think it's not difficult to put those two things together. In other words, do Chazal mean to say that Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't understand Borer, that you could only separate the good from the bad? Is that what he didn't understand, or did he not understand the lathe?
Right.
So if you just take that Chazal at face value and you say that he couldn't understand, what didn't he understand? He didn't understand what tzitzis looked like? Is that what Chazal is saying? He didn't understand what tefillin looked like? Or was there a deeper level of the mitzvahs that he wasn't getting, and then as a matana, Hashem. So I don't know that Chazal is necessarily again.
It could be a raya that the easy part is learning the mitzvahs. The hard part is putting in.
100%.
Even for Moshe Rabbeinu.
Correct. I want to share something that I had somebody at my house who was pretty much shomer mitzvahs, kept Torah mitzvahs. He had what to still take on. Pretty much there, not entirely. And he said to me during the meal on Shabbos, he said, Rabbi, I don't understand something. When people talk about improving in Judaism and growing in Yiddishkeit, I understand what that means for me, because I'm still not there. There are still things that I don't yet do. There are still aspects of Shabbos that I don't even know about. And there's some that I know about that I'm just not ready to do. I'm pretty much there. I'm like 90%. So when people talk about growth and developing, I get it. Rabbi, he said to me, I don't, like, what in the world do you have to do? Like, you're doing it all. And he answered as an honest question, not getting, like, what, like, here I was all 26 at the time. And I have someone saying to me, like, I don't get it. You're done.
That's a beautiful question.
It's a beautiful question, but there's a more beautiful answer that was so obvious to me that it was just so... That question never occurred to me. And it wasn't because I'd even learned this. First of all, there are plenty of things that I don't yet know, and there are plenty of things that I can improve on. But even if there weren't, this is what it's all about. It's not about making sure you keep kosher and keep Shabbos and put on tzitzis and tefillin. There's a breath, you have to get everything done, and then there's depth. And there's no end to the depth of the mitzvah that a person could do. There's no end to the meaning of putting on tefillin. Tomorrow morning should be like it was this morning. There's never a point where you could put on, you could say, it's done. That never happens. So whereas he was simply holding on, I just need to get this straight. I just need to get it all done. Someone who's holding there isn't yet working on the depth of the connection in his relationship with the Creator when he does his mitzvah. He's just trying to get all the pieces straight. And that's the correct order. First, get it all done. Make sure you're doing what you need to do. And where he was at, where he had never yet even begun to go downwards in his depth of understanding, he was just spreading out the breath to make sure it covered his bases. So he couldn't even like understand like what I do all day. Like there's nothing left to grow, there's nothing to do. The reality is just the opposite. He's just working on the building block, the aleph beis of Yiddishkeit, of Torah Judaism, is making sure you're doing the right things. Great. Now we're there. Now let's start. Now the work begins, because now that you're doing all the right things, you're eating the right food, staying away from the wrong ones, keeping Shabbos, keeping the mitzvahs, now we can start serving Hashem. What does the Gemara say? What's the most appropriate element of our being to praise Hashem? That which is most similar to Him. It's the neshama, which has the five similarities to Hashem, sees but is not seen, fills the whole world, fills the body, sustains the body, lives within a room, is pure. Those five things, that's what the Gemara says. Let that neshama come and give praise to Hashem that shares the same five qualities. Your body just needs to get itself in a position where the neshama is able to do that. Now that you're there, now we can begin the task of life. Now we begin digging deeper, fulfilling those physical mitzvahs that we do with more lev, with more neshama, as we begin to develop that relationship. And that is, it was just amazing, that concept, that he bechlal, he didn't even hear that. He wasn't sure, like, he didn't know what I was doing. And I never thought of that question, because I know how meaningless sometimes my mitzvahs are. I mean, to me, not that, every time we do a mitzvah, there's chah. But like, how many times have I put on a talus or tzitzis and never even thought of that? It's just like putting on a pair of socks. And it's like, you get dressed. What do you do when you get dressed? I put on my socks, put on a pair of pants, put on a shirt, and I put on my tzitzis. If you would ask me, did I put on tzitzis? I would only know that I put on tzitzis this morning because I figured I put on my socks. I must have put on my tzitzis also. But did you know you did a mitzvah? Did you know that you did a mitzvah d'oraisa you just fulfilled? Brachos? How do we make brachos? How do we bench? I mean, the list is endless. The list is endless. We really keep Shabbos. Could we keep the mitzvahs of Shabbos? Are we tuned into what Shabbos is about? I mean, there's no end to the depth that we need to see. And that's Revolvers, and that's where we're going to be focused on. That's what this... So as we prepare for Kabbalah Satorah, that's why I wanted to learn this piece, and we'll do some others that are preparing us for receiving the Torah. Not just the do's and the don'ts, but the essence, the shorish, the neshem of the Kabbalah Satorah, which is all in our hearts. Shall continue.